Welcome back once again, 334th installment of the Parish of the Patriots. We just keep on trucking. This train has no brakes. We're rolling down the line, and I'm glad you joined us here. We're going to have a great show. Always set out to have a great show. Maybe some weeks were more successful than others. I don't know. I always like to think, hopefully, there's something in the show that somebody got something out of. And again, I do appreciate y'all joining this week. If you are new, if this is your first time tuning in, we do have a Christian-specific segment. That's roughly the halfway mark of the show. I encourage you to listen to it. Give it a chance. It might be something different, even if that's not usually particularly your thing. But it is geared towards people who are already believers. It's not really about trying to convince somebody who isn't. But anyway, I encourage you to give that a shot one way or the other. If you do get something out of the show, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. We got snail mail. You go right here to the description page for the Parish of the Patriots. Skim through the description that nobody reads, I assume. I don't think really anybody reads. I think you're either going to listen or you're not. But if you go to the bottom there, got the snail mail address. And that's what I got. The cryptocurrency addresses on Radio Albion were put there by Sven before he went away. I have no access to them. I don't want access to them. That is his deal. So that's what I got. You're gonna have to. It's easier than setting up a crypto account. You just address an envelope. So with that having been said, we migrate to the listener supporter mailbag, and I have one this week. I actually got one this week, so we actually have a listener supporter mailbag. Let's see here, Grandpa. I hope this reaches you okay. Longtime listener, first time to send any shekels. Well, I do appreciate it. You and Radio Albion are a shining light in this time of darkness. Keep up the good work. Hope you're doing well yourself, and be sure and give my best to Sven as well. And that's from Dean. I appreciate it, Dean. And yeah, Sven appreciates all of you as well. We're counting down the days. I'm counting down. Believe me, I'm counting down the days. I stay in regular contact with Sven, and he's doing great. He's doing well. I know I don't share a lot of details, because honestly, they're bad actors, sadly, in this world. I wouldn't be real happy that Sven is doing just fine. And because of that, I don't give a lot of details. But he is doing fine, and we count down the days to when he's 100% free. I look forward to it. But I do, I converse with him on a very regular basis, and he is doing great. I appreciate Dr. Johnson appreciates all of y'all sticking with us. So just take this opportunity. I say it every so often. Don't say it nearly enough. You know, all of you who have stuck with us here at Radio Albion in Sven's absence, because, you know, I post the shows up. I kind of try to keep things together. And I know the site is way dated, way behind. There's not nearly the amount of content that there was. I mean, there's just a trickle of content. It's just Dr. Johnson and myself. That's it. It's all we got on here. So I know a lot of the stuff y'all liked listening to hasn't been here for a long time now. And I appreciate y'all sticking with us. I really do. And I know Matt Johnson does. Dr. Johnson does as well. Sven does for sure. So again, thank you all. Thank you, Dean. It means a lot when I hear from y'all. It's real easy when you do this to get feeling like sometimes you're just yelling into the void. It's always nice. No, y'all are getting something out of it to hear from y'all. I do very much appreciate it. That gets us through our listener supporter mailbag. You get to be the Lone Ranger this week. Appreciate it. Got a couple things jotted down. I'm recording this on Saturday. I'm back on my Saturday routine. I usually record the show on the weekends and get it posted up, to go up on Tuesday. Get it out of the way. Knock it out of the way. And I saw a story this morning. This is just a little thing. We're not going to spend a lot of time on it. But they passed their law in latest madness from the UK. I read an article this morning right before doing the show, because I'll skim through mostly just see if, you know, half the world's on fire yet and it's not. So then I go on and record the show, because, like, you know, it'd be silly to sit here and record the show talking about, you know, the latest speech laws in Britain or something. And then I check and, oh, someone dropped a nuclear bomb somewhere today. So I always at least skim the headlines. And I saw the story and I just... They've passed a law in the UK officially outlawing what they're calling ninja swords. I think what they mean are samurai swords. I have one of those, by the way. It's just a decoration. I think they mean there'll be no more samurai. We have a samurai problem in Britain. Britain finally realizes they've got a problem. And apparently the problem is the samurai. The article says they banned ninja swords. I think what they mean is just katanas, Japanese swords. Because apparently they've been letting too many Japanese come in. And they're doing these knife attacks. Now, I read this article, and again, I'm not reading from the article, otherwise I'd post a link up here. I'm just summarizing it, and this is probably something y'all are familiar with anyway, but I read this article, and it's going on and on about this inexplicable rise in knife crime in the UK, and we just can't figure it out. So as a part of their cracking down on this knife crime that we just can't figure out the source of, they're banning the samurai, because apparently, yeah, you know, you just picture all these feudal with the top knot. You know what I'm talking about? Top knot Japan. Got that top knot haircut. These feudal. Oda Nobunaga has returned and is raising havoc in Britain. It's Nobunaga's revenge on the British. His spirit has been revived. Samurai violence on the streets of London. The evil can be so stupid and funny at the same time. Because, you know, one of the, as y'all know, I put the Christian specific segment separate, but sometimes I just have to point spiritual matters out. You know, the spiritual nature of what you see in the world is one of the things of that is this desire, this demand that people will go along with the lie. And, you know, a lot of people observe this as clown world's inversion, you know, how they invert the truth. It's just another way of saying they turn the truth on its head. It's a lie. And you read this, I read this whole article, and it was talking about knife crime and the British politicians talking about, you know, trying to combat this inexplicable rise in knife crime. In the whole article, you're going through it, and there's never any mention of where the source of this is coming from. It's just like an organic event. It's sort of like when you read the mainstream media's accounts of the ethnic cleansing in Gaza, and they act like it's a hurricane or something. It's just a natural disaster. These people are suffering from they're like the victims of Hurricane Katrina. They're just the victims of a natural disaster. A hurricane blew through, and now these people are starving, and we can't explain how that's happening, but, you know, it's really bad, and we're really concerned about it. Same thing. This article goes on and on. It was going on and on about, you know, the knife crime in Britain, and you think at some point in time you're going to find the footnote of, where did this start from? When did the British get so stabby stabby? And a part of this, part of the inversion is everybody's supposed to sit here and act like it's a mystery to them too. You read it, you read these stories, they give you these narratives, and see, you're supposed to go along with acting like it's a complete mystery, and you don't know either. None of us know. We can't speak of what the possible sources of this could be, because that would make you evil. See, this is the way the oppression, the censorship works, is just, you know the truth, and you're supposed to shut up. You're not allowed to say that. So everybody nods along and acts like this is a complete freaking mystery. Like, we just don't know. After all, if you say, I thought this diversity was supposed to be our strength, you could go to prison in Britain. We know this, correct? It's all so tiresome. Yes, the samurai has been wreaking havoc on the streets of Britain. But don't worry, Keir Starmer, Sir Keir Starmer and company. It's the modern day King Arthur. They will rise up the Knights of the Round Table to stop Oda Nobunaga from creating havoc on the streets of London. Now, I mentioned Gaza a while ago, and I know y'all are tired of hearing Gaza, and I'm just using it as a jump off point, so bear with me. But one of the classic characteristics of Clown World and their lies and their tactics, you notice these there's always a constant distraction. All of a sudden, we're starting to hear a lot about the Palestinians in Gaza. We've even got some British, picking on the British. Well, Britain is threatening. The UK is threatening to do it too. But you've got some European countries now that are really stepping up. And they're saying they're going to recognize Palestine as an independent nation. I don't know what the hell good that does. Now they can go to the UN and they can really wag their fingers at Israel. But now all of a sudden, you are seeing more and more discussion openly about Gaza. So we're getting ready, I guess, to go to some other phase in this. But we are seeing a lot more discussion in the media. It's becoming a little more okay now to discuss the genocide in Gaza. When you're cynical as I am, you have to start. Your immediate thought is, what are they distracting us from? Because that's not been allowed. That's been anti-Semitic for several years now. But now all of a sudden, the media is saying it's okay. They're starting to discuss. You've got European countries and even the UK is threatening to throw their immense weight. You don't want the mighty British Empire to get involved. That's the last thing anybody wants. The mighty British Empire is even threatening to throw their weight behind recognizing Palestine. Like, again, I'm not even sure what the hell that's supposed to do. But again, when you're as cynical as I am, you start thinking, okay, well, what are they distracting us from? Because this has been a taboo subject. Everybody's been walking around, everybody. You know what I mean? The politicians, media, government, all the bought and paid for shills. I've been walking around like you're not supposed to, just like you're not supposed to mention where the source of the knife crime in Britain is. You're not supposed to notice what the source of the death and destruction and ethnic cleansing in Gaza of the Palestinians, where it came from. It's just a natural disaster. The Israelis are the migrants of the Middle East. You're just not supposed to. The bombs just fell organically. We don't know where they came from. They all have Made in USA written on them. We don't know. They just organically fell on these people. But nevertheless, my first thought is, what are they distracting us from? And I was considering this before sitting down and starting this show this week. What could the distraction be? Why is it now all of a sudden in the mainstream, it's become somewhat okay? It's still, I mean, there's still a lot of reins on it, but it's become somewhat okay to start actually mentioning the ethnic cleansing in Gaza. So what might they be distracted now in before the Epstein thing? I don't think that's it. It might be part of it. But what about, because you got to figure tit for tat. You got to figure some equality here. If they're distracting us from the ethnic cleansing, if the ethnic cleansing in Gaza of the Palestinians, which is a real thing, if it were to be a distraction, then it has to be a distraction from something of an equal amount of weight. Does that make sense? It wouldn't make sense to, burn the entire house down to cover up a single document. You just got to be proportional. So if talking about the ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians is a form of distraction, then in my view, it's got to be distracting from something of an equal weight. And what might that be? You see, I like considering these things. I like thought-provoking ideas. I like to sit around and consider the possibilities. And as I was sitting around considering the possibilities of this before recording the show this morning, I thought, well, it would just make sense if there was another ethnic cleansing going on, conducted more or less by these same people. And lo and behold, what about the ethnic cleansing of the Ukraine? We hear a lot about the Ukraine in the context of Ukraine's heroic struggle against the evil Russians. And what we really have in reality is the ethnic cleansing of Ukraine. So many people have left the country that aren't coming back. And we don't know how many because they lie, but a large number. We know a large number. We can say that. I'm not going to pretend to have an exact number. All anyone has is estimates, but a large number of Ukrainian men have lost their lives being fed into this meat grinder. Part of these ridiculous propaganda narratives, you know, oh, the Russians have lost 6 million troops. Come on, shut the hell up. But they don't want you considering the flip side. How many Ukrainian men have lost their lives being fed into this meat grinder and why? You see, while now the Palestinians in Gaza get all the coverage for being ethnically cleansed and genocided, and that's true, and I'm not downplaying that, how come nobody's talking about the ethnic cleansing and genocide of the Ukrainian people? Why is that? You know, and if they're being ethnically cleansed, who's planning to replace them? Dr. Johnson has talked about the new Khazaria project as a basically, and I think he's correct, as like a backup plan. If the Israel thing falls apart, they're going to have somewhere else to go. And lo and behold, you would just so happen to have Ukraine all cleared out of Ukrainians. There's very few things that I get. No, let me put it a different way. It's exhausting with the lies and the misdirection of the media. And one of those things that I find particularly galling is when I read these media accounts criticizing Zelensky. Now, I'm not fixing to defend Zelensky. I get tired of these news articles, news stories, whatever, that criticize Zelensky. And it will inevitably say, the criticism always comes around to how many of his people he's willing to sacrifice. Zelensky keeps feeding all of his people. He just keeps sacrificing his fellow Ukrainians. You know it, and I know it. I'm sorry, the truth is the truth. He's not Ukrainian. He's not Ukrainian. He's Jewish. They're not his people. If you took a white man, if you took me, and you made me in charge of Zimbabwe, in charge of a black African country, and we got into a war with a larger black African country, and I just kept sending wave after wave of black Zimbabwe people into the meat grinder, into an unwinnable war, to where now the country is basically emptying out. Would the media be writing stories about why does GPD keep feeding all of his people, his fellow Zimbabweans, fellow residents of Zimbabwe? Why does he keep feeding his own? No, nobody would say that because it would look stupid. You'd sit there and go, well, he's feeding them in there because they're not his people. He don't give a shit. He's not a Zimbabwean. He's not a black African. He doesn't care how many Africans he kills. It would be a correct criticism of that behavior. It would be ridiculous to say, well, that doesn't, we don't understand. Who's doing the knife crime? No, we don't understand why he's feeding his fellow Zimbabweans into the meat grinder, because he's not a Zimbabwean. Everybody would sit around and go, well, he's not them. Obviously, this is somebody who doesn't give a shit about the Zimbabwe people. And yet, the media will never point that out about Zelensky, do they? It's always, why does he keep mysteriously ethnically cleansing his own people? Well, they're not his. Why does he give a shit? He's getting ready to exit stage right with his suitcases full of cash, except he hasn't been taking the hint. I've been talking about this for probably at least a year now. The hints are getting more and more overt that it's time for him to leave. And he's so addicted to being a celebrity, he won't take the hint. Keeps hanging around. And if he doesn't take the hit long enough, he's going to get removed. But nevertheless, one way or the other, he's going to leave. If Zelensky leaves office tomorrow, does anybody think he plans to hang out and help take part in rebuilding his country, Ukraine, with his fellow Ukrainians? That just sounds stupid, doesn't it? Because it is stupid. Nobody thinks that. Is he going to go live in Florida or Tel Aviv or some damn place? He ain't going to stay in Ukraine. Nobody with any common sense think he's going to stay in Ukraine. Why? The point here is, there's another genocide, another ethnic cleansing. You read these stories about how they're press ganging people. They're grabbing guys off the street. There's plenty of videos on the internet of this happening. So it's real. If you're fighting a patriotic war that the Ukrainians are 100% behind, then why aren't they en masse volunteering? And why are you having to grab people off the street, kicking and screaming, and shove them into a van to go throw them off into the meat grinder? Hear these neocon politicians talk about how brilliant the Ukraine thing is because we're draining Russian resources. And we're not having to be involved. It's a brilliant strategy. What they're doing is they're ethnically cleansing the Ukrainians and they're using Russian munitions to do it. That's what they're really doing. They're ethnically cleansing. I'm going to say it again because it bears repeating. They're ethnically cleansing the Ukrainian people and they're using Russian money, Russian men, and Russian weapons to do so. They created a situation that they knew the Russians would have to engage in, and they're ethnically cleansing the Ukrainians. And then you have Trump and them and all these other people, and they act like this is a conflict between Ukraine and Russia, like the West didn't have anything to do with it. They're ethnically, and nobody. Now you can talk a little bit. Now the mainstream is saying it's okay. Because, see, when they tell you, when they refuse to talk about it, it's like going back to our opening little bit here about you're not allowed to talk about where the knife crime is started from. What's the source of it? The message is, when the media refuses to point it out, the message is clear. You're not allowed to talk about it either. And for a lot of people, they won't. We do here at Radio Albion because that's what we do. When the media refuses to talk about the genocide in Gaza, the message is clear. That means you're not allowed to, too. Obviously, people do anyway. But still, the overriding message is you're not allowed to do that. And a certain amount of people are influenced by that. They're just weak-willed and they're influenced by what the media implies is allowed to be talked about and isn't. There's a tone set. It's like reading the room. You know, it's on a grander scale. If you walk into a room, you're going to be careful about what you talk about. You get a feel for what's allowed to be spoken of in your social circle that you're in at that time. The media sets that tone. And now that the media is saying, okay, it's somewhat okay to talk about the genocide of the Palestinians, we're going to open that. We're going to crack that valve open and allow you, in our generosity, we're going to allow you to talk about that a little bit. And nobody's going to talk, but what you're not going to talk about is the genocide of the Ukrainian people. Yeah. You're not going to talk about that. It makes me sick seeing these people on the internet who purport to support. They virtue signal. They posture. Now, a lot of them are paid shills, but they posture that they support the Ukraine against the evil Russians. You know, they support the Ukraine. What does that even mean? Because I would say they don't support the Ukrainian people. They're supporting the ethnic cleansing, the genocide of the Ukrainian people. But it's Putler's fault. These are probably a lot of these are the same people that would turn around and say, well, all Hamas has to do is release the hostages. What about the hostages? How come Hamas hasn't released the hostages? Same people. Putler could just withdraw his troops and quit invading Ukraine. And none of them are going to talk about the genocide of the Ukrainian people. I mean, like, we're not supposed to give a shit. These people are being genocided. Who's going to replace them? I chuckle because I'll read where people will say, well, they're going to replace them. They're going to just flood the country. When this is over, they're going to flood the country. People from the Middle East and Africa, just like they do in the rest of Western Europe. And maybe so. But if by some chance the whole Israel thing falls apart, then I don't think you're going to see them people coming in. I don't know how it's going to play. I'm not pretending to know. But they're ethnically cleansing it of Ukrainians for a reason. Somebody's going to fill them people's shoes. Somebody's going to fill in that territory. I just think it's sad that nobody mentions this. I say nobody. You know what I mean. Nobody, even people that go out there and virtue signal and claim to support the Ukrainian cause, they never talk about the Ukrainians being ethnically cleansed. They just talk about supporting more Ukrainians being ethnically cleansed. We gotta send more of them. I don't know, you know. I think it's sad. You know, these people are being essentially genocided and no one's talking about that. People sit there and have arguments over the, you know, where the battle line, where the front is and where it's moving and if Russia is or isn't making progress and this and that and how much money is being poured into the Ukraine. Yeah, it's an ethic. We're funding yet two genocides at once. Think about that. The West is funding two genocides at the same time. The one in Gaza, the Palestinians, and the Ukrainian one. We're sending weapons to stop Putler. You're sending weapons to keep it going, to ethnically cleanse more Ukrainians. That is what's happening. I mean, that's just a fact. You had a country with X amount of people, and now there's a whole lot less of them there. And every day that goes by, there's fewer. So you're literally cleansing the country of the native population. So the U.S. and the West, when you say the West, you're talking about the U.S. and their lackey vassal states are funding not one. I mean, because the Israel one's obvious. Israel ceases to exist as a country the minute it doesn't have outside support. It is the ultimate welfare state. So the West, it's not funding one, but they're funding two genocides. They're supporting two genocides at the same time. That of the Palestinians, which is, you know, I'm glad people are noticing. But I think the Ukrainians deserve to get noticed too. When does the conversation turn from supporting Ukraine by keeping this war going? When do we finally get to turn and start talking about the funding? What they're actually doing is funding yet a second ethnic cleansing, a second genocide, this one in the Ukraine. Telling you, it's an evil world we live in. It's crazy. funding two genocides at one time. The Ukrainians get deserve, they deserve to get noticed too. It deserves to be pointed out. Anyway, we got to get into the Christian specific segment. Let's keep this thing rolling. It's going to keep, we're going to keep going. Keep the good stuff going. So you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's Christian specific segment at the Parish of the Patriots. Now, I've talked about this before, but as we have, as we continue to descend into the lunacy of clown world, a lot of Christian believers are seeming to become more and more obsessed with the book of Revelation. I hear it all the time. I see people all the time making videos talking about we're getting that much closer to the beast, to the Antichrist. And of course, every day that goes by, we are indeed getting close to that time. But one of the things that strikes me about this is, once again, this complete misunderstanding. Before we get into really what I want to talk about today, I honestly think like the vast majority of Christian people really just need to not read Revelation, because they just, it is just probably the most misunderstood book of the Bible. And whenever I get into a conversation with somebody about the book of Revelation, it quickly becomes evident that they have no really clue to the basic nature of it, if that makes sense. Now, saying that, I don't want to sound arrogant, like I know it all. I'm not. Y'all know me. I'm humble. I don't claim to be a know-it-all. I'm just a regular guy. But reading Revelation, one thing, let me just lay it out here. At least a basic, because people are still going to go on and read it. If you, when you read the book of Revelation, understand, it really highlights one thing. I mean, I'm not saying there's nothing good in it. It is, but it's a pretty advanced course, if that makes sense. Revelation highlights the fact that difference. You know how I always like to point out the difference that we're in time. We're in the temporal realm. Time exists here where we're at, while we're in our bodies, while we're alive, walking the face of this earth. God is in the eternal. I say the eternal. There's other terms you can use, but he's outside of time. And there's that difference. When we leave this world, we'll be outside of time. And now, when John wrote Revelation, he was taken up and shown these things. He was temporarily removed from the temporal realm and shown these things. So when you read Revelation, understand you're seeing things out of order because time doesn't exist. This is why it's written in one of the reasons it's written in a confusing way. I mean, he writes it. I told somebody recently, I had this conversation IRL with somebody, and I said, understand, he wrote these things in the order that he saw them, not in the order that they occur, because he was taken up outside of time to witness these things. So when he writes, then I looked and beheld, I saw this. Well, that doesn't mean that's going to be the order that the things take place. It means that's the order that he saw them. He was outside of time, so he's seeing things. And when you understand that and you read through there and it talks about, you know, the stars falling from heaven and rebelling against God, you know, he's talking about Satan's rebellion. It's out of order because he's witnessing these things while outside of time. You know, I hope that that makes a certain amount of sense. And I think that's where a lot of the confusion comes. That's not our topic for the day, but it's just one of those things, because I hear people obsessing about Revelation. Revelation, the Antichrist is coming tomorrow. And yet tomorrow comes and goes. There seems to be this, I don't know, what do I want to say, like doomsday view of the return of the anti, of the return, I'm sorry, of the appearance of the Antichrist. I'm getting ahead in my thinking here. I'm sorry. Try not to get ahead of myself. There seems to be this doomsday thinking about the coming of the Antichrist. Like, Satan is sitting here with his ultimate nuclear weapon to wipe out everybody with the Antichrist showing up. It is the ultimate power. People get this, they get it all twisted. And it's kind of funny because people alternate between these narratives where it paints the devil as being a moron, and then these other narratives where, like, I mean, he's basically on even footing with God, and this could go either way. And neither viewpoint is correct. People get this view that, like, this is the ultimate, like, it almost becomes, and I get it, because we are in this world, and Satan has dominion in this world, and is doing things in this world, and influence in this world. But that doesn't mean he always wins. And I think that's what I'm trying to get. I think
that's what I'm trying to say.
That's part of what I'm trying to say. People get this attitude like the devil always wins. You'll see this with people that will talk about the Jews. And if you listen to these people long enough, and you listen to some of these people long, I mean, they'll get this thing where, you know, they understand. They'll talk about, you know, well, they once they grasp, you know, the amount of influence the Jews have in entertainment, the government, banking, which is all a fact, they seem to then, they go on with that, and they themselves paint the Jews into being these omnipotent people. You know, people, you'll read an online discussion and somebody will be talking about something, and one of these people will jump in and be like, oh no, they've planned for this. They've planned for this. The Jews always win. It doesn't matter what you do. They always are going to win. And after a while, you listen to some of these people and you're thinking, well, maybe they are the chosen people. Maybe the Jews really are God's chosen people, because according to you, they're practically omnipotent. It doesn't matter what you do. They've already planned for it. They always win. It's just silly. Well, a lot of Christian believers seem to adopt that same attitude about the devil. You know, you're a Christian believer, and yet these people will have this idea, that will have this attitude like the devil always wins. It doesn't matter. The devil always wins. I mean, they'll, like, as a footnote, they'll say, well, Jesus will return and we win in the end. But up to that point, we lose every time. Kind of negative. Don't like the negative energy from it. And it's not correct. Let me ask a question. I pose this question. If the appearance of the Antichrist is like the nuclear weapon of the spiritual war, why hasn't Satan done it yet? You know? The real question. What's he waiting on? If the appearance of the Antichrist means, you know, the ultimate move, this is if Jesus doesn't return and rescue us, I mean, this is it. This is Satan's ultimate winning move. The return of because I'm thinking of the return of Christ as a counter to it. And yeah. And I'm only on my first. I'm still milking out the first cup of coffee. If the coming of the Antichrist is the ultimate move, then what's he waiting on? He should have dropped that move a long time ago, right? I mean, that's what you're waiting on, you know? If that's such a winner. Have you ever played chess? I have. I haven't in years, but I've played chess before. And if you've ever played chess, you understand, you know, it's about trying to think so many moves ahead and picture what your opponent is going to do, and you're moving your chess pieces. And if you've ever played chess against somebody that's better than you, and again, I have, you hit a point to where the game isn't over. I mean, you've got say half a dozen or so moves left, but you just stop. Or if you ever, even if you haven't played chess, if you've ever watched a chess match, like a professional chess competition, and these people will be playing and you hit a spot, they hit a spot and they still have moves left. And one of the players will just say, well, that's it. Game's over. I concede. And you're like, well, what do you mean? You got pieces left on the board. Why don't you keep moving them around? Because that person sees, they're able to look far enough ahead, and you look far ahead in your moves and you realize that it doesn't matter what moves you make, they're going to counter it with this. If you do this, they're going to do this. And you go through all of that, and then you realize that no matter what move you make, you're going to lose. The match is lost. You have moves left to make, but you've lost the match. The coming of the Antichrist is that point. It's to where, if you imagine a nation at war, and it's apparent that the nation has lost the war, and they just go ahead and just make every last desperate move just simply because they don't have any other moves left. That's the correct way. I believe that's the correct way to view the coming of the Antichrist. It's not the ultimate victory move. It's the last desperate move because that's all that's left. Just go ahead and wipe out as much as you can before it's over. And we're going to get into why I believe that. I'm actually going to explain why I believe that, and I think it will make some sense. But I want to, before we get into that, I want to back that up and talk about the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. And we're not changing subjects. We're on the same subject. The crucifixion of Jesus is a great illustration of what I'm talking about as far as these chess moves. Did the devil want to kill Jesus? Now, I bet most Christian believers would immediately answer, well, yes, he did. That's why he had him crucified. And I would say, no, he did not. Because he, again, this goes back to what I was saying. The devil's not stupid. He understood that was a losing move. He didn't want to make that move. The devil did not want to crucify Jesus, and this is proved in the events leading up to it. You think about it. The crucifixion of Jesus Christ was the last move. There was no moves left. He tried to convince him to switch sides. If you'll bow down and worship me, look, I'll put you in charge of all these kingdoms of the world if you just bow down and worship me. If you'll do this, if you'll compromise on your integrity, he did everything he could to avoid that last move. He did. He made every attempt. Why? If he just wanted to kill Jesus, if he had the power to kill Jesus in his physical form, well, he would have gone straight to that move if that's what he wanted to do, if that was a winner. But he didn't. He tried desperately to avoid that. He tried applying social pressure. Jesus' family comes to him. It's like, man, you got to chill. These people are going to kill you if you keep it up. You need to just chill and come on home. Stop doing that. He tried every other thing to work something out, and none of it worked. That's why he finally had that last desperate move. Do you think the devil didn't know that Jesus would have dominion over death and death wouldn't be able to hold him? I mean, sure, the Pharisees were running around going, we got him. But you can bet that their father, the devil, already knew it was a losing move. He had no choice. And when it got to that point, he couldn't allow Jesus to continue doing what he's doing on this earth, because he was just going to wind up ultimately running everything. He was going to wind up in control. So he couldn't allow that. He couldn't get him to switch sides. He couldn't get him to just simply stop. So the only move he had left was to execute him. That was it. There was no other move. And of course, we know what happened after that. When we say victory on the cross, and we have victory because Jesus rose from the dead, do you think the devil didn't see that coming? You know, and if so, then why did he do it? You know, when Christian believers say the devil lost when Jesus rose from the dead, do you think that took him by surprise? The chess moves were made to the point he had no other moves left. So that was the move. And that set the next round of moves up in place to start being carried out. It's like you have an era that leads up to Jesus Christ. All of these things, all of these events, this chess game lasts thousands of years. And all of these moves lead up to Jesus Christ. The devil loses that round because at the end of the match, again, he had no other moves except to execute Jesus, which ultimately, of course, he rose from the dead, which set the next round into motion. Now man can carry out God's purpose that he intended from the beginning. Does this sound like the devil is winning? Again, I get wore out with Christians who have this, I don't know, fait accompli, this attitude, like it doesn't matter what you do, devil's going to win. Now, having said all of that, back to the coming of the Antichrist. The coming of the Antichrist, from the devil's perspective, I believe, is much like the crucifixion of Jesus. It's a move he doesn't want to make. But does that make sense? It's not this ultimate thing. This is the coming of the Antichrist as we tend to envision it, as we talk about it. It's not the ultimate winning move. It's the desperate moves when the match is clearly already lost. When you look ahead at all the pieces that are left on the chessboard and what moves are laid, yes, you have moves left. But even if you have a dozen, a really good chess player can sit there and there's maybe more than a dozen moves left in the match, but they already know it's lost because they see forward at every move they could make and they understand they're going to lose. The match is lost. But in this spiritual match, it goes on. And so these are just the coming of the Antichrist is the last desperate moves. We're going to get into why that is. It's not. Yes, it means things get even harder for believers on this earth. That's true. But again, remember, from the devil's perspective, this is just these last gasp acts of desperation. As a side, kind of a footnote to this, you have to understand the devil was cast down to the earth. This goes back to, if you do read Revelation, understand you're not reading it in the order that the events occur. You're reading it in the orders that John saw them. Because in the middle of all this, he saw, you know, basically he saw the devil cast down into earth and he was enraged because he knew his time was limited. Satan is cast into the temporal realm. Time affects him. He's not in the eternal realm. Imagine playing chess against somebody that time doesn't exist for them. They actually can watch the moves play out. That's what it would be like to play chess against God. So the devil is definitely at a disadvantage here because he is stuck in the temporal realm. God is in the eternal realm. Of course, you're not going to win that game. That's why the devil's mad. Makes sense. Now, one of the fundamental things I always think, you know, I always talk about, and I believe, when you understand about, that you have to understand about the devil, the way he operates, because he has to operate within the rules of this system, the temporal realm that we live in, this creation God made for us, is God gives man free will. We have a choice. I've said this before, and I think it's important to bear in mind when you see events or you read about things happening. There are things, in a lot of ways, men themselves can be more wicked and evil than Satan. Satan will always give you a choice. He'll make it as difficult as he can. And he would try to make you think you don't have a choice. But if something is of the devil, he will always make sure there's a choice there. Because you can't stand accused before God if you didn't have a choice in the matter. Men, wickedness for men, they will literally give you no choice. It's the difference of choosing sin or somebody just beats you unconscious. You know, if you think of sodomy, you know, if you make the choice and choose to do that, it's a whole nother thing than if five guys jump you, beat the shit out of you till you can't move, hold you down and sodomize you. That's a whole different thing. One may be from the devil because you have a choice in the matter and you choose to do that and you can stand before God accused. There is no accusing you if five dudes beat the shit out of you, hold you down on the ground and sodomize you. You didn't have a choice in the matter. You were just overpowered. This is the wickedness, the difference between the evil and wickedness of man versus that of Satan. Now, again, Satan will always try to make it as difficult a choice. He doesn't play fair. You look at the early disciples, the apostles, you know, when they were executed, they still had a choice. They didn't have a choice. So they had a choice. They could have agreed to shut the hell up and go back to being fishermen. But they chose to continue their work in the ministry, even unto death. I find it so laughable when these people are like, oh, this is a grand conspiracy to make people submit to the Jews. It's a 2,000 plus year master plan by the omnipotent Jews to get people to worship them and to be subservient to them. It was all fake. Are you going? If this master plan, if you're one of the early disciples, are you going to go ahead and go through with being executed in an unimaginably brutal way as some sort of, yes, I'm going to go ahead and agree to be executed in this horrible, brutal manner, but it'll be worth it because in a couple thousand years, white people will be totally subservient to the Jews. It's just stupid. This is what I meant when I talk about these people that paint the Jews into being the omnipotent people that can do no wrong. All of their plans are just beyond our comprehension. It's silly. I'm getting a little off track here. Satan always gives you a choice. He operates within this system. That's how things are maintained. That's why you read... He operates in a manner of influence. All the leaders of the world don't go to a secret room where they meet up face to face with the personification of Satan and he gives them marching orders. It doesn't work that way. It works on influence because he's working within the system. Men still have to have a choice. That way they can stand accused before God. So he's working within that system. The coming of the Antichrist, what you're basically talking about is Satan intervening now directly into the system instead of working within the boundaries of the system God created. So right now, he works within the boundaries. You know, since Christ's resurrection, Satan works within the boundaries of the system God created, this temporal realm that we live in. When things get to the point, he has to pull the Antichrist card. He has to manifest physically into this world. Now he's taken things to another level. And this is what I mean about this is a losing proposition for him. It's not the ultimate winning move. This is... He's looked at all of the chess moves left on the table and he understands he's lost. So now this is all he's got left. You know, this means this is it. There's no forfeiting the game. He's got to play it out. So he's going to do as much damage as he can. You see, making that move, means directly now intervening in the system so the system will not function as God designed it. As long as he's just using influence and men still have a choice and this, he's working within the confines of the system. Flip it over from God's perspective. There's no reason to not let the system continue to work as it's designed. Yes, the devil is influencing. Yes, devil is creating all of these different ways to sin, all of these different forms of temptation. But the system is still intact, and the system is still functioning as God designed it. It's self-correcting. God doesn't have to intervene. The system is self-correcting. When things get out of balance, the system will self-correct. The coming of the Antichrist means Satan is going to directly intervene in the system. And that's not a winner. Now, because why that is, because as I just said a minute ago, as long as Satan is working within the confines of the system, God has no reason to intervene. He's just, from God's perspective, why wouldn't God just go ahead and let the system continue to run as it's designed? However, once the devil makes that desperate move to directly intervene in the system, now he's short-circuiting the system and God is going to end the system. Let's bear down on that. A good illustration to think of it. You've got a server, the server firm, you know, in computer world, a computer server. And you're the devil, and you decide to, you know, on this server is an internet forum. And you keep going on this internet forum, shit posting, shill posting, whatever, on this forum. Now, for whatever reason, maybe people are making fun of your shill posting and they're not buying it anymore, and they're pointing out, calling you names, making jokes, whatever. So you say, I will show them, and you decide to put your hacking skills to work. And you hack the server. You go in and take over the server. You go in to the server. Instead of just shitposting on the internet forum, you go in and hack this. You go in and hack the server. Ha! You win, right? No. Because the other party is standing in the server room and he can just unplug it. What have you won? Yes, you can hack the server, but the person you're trying to undermine has access to the server room and they can just walk in there and unplug you. I don't care how good of a hacker you are. If somebody literally walks in and I'm in the server, I've got control of the server. If the server owner walks in and just unplugs the damn thing, what have you gained? God, it's a losing move for the devil to roll out, to physically intervene, to literally intervene directly in the system. Because once he does that, God has no reason. As long as he plays within the rules of letting the system run, it continues. But once he makes that move to directly intervene in the system, to physically manifest, to step in and directly intervene in the system, God's going to pull the plug. That's what the return of Jesus Christ means. The return of Jesus Christ means he's pulling the plug on the server. He's taking the lid off of this big aquarium that we live in, this big glass enclosure. He takes the lid off and the temporal realm is destroyed. The game is over. Why hasn't God done this yet? Why hasn't Jesus Christ returned yet? Because he has no reason to, because right now everybody's operating within the confines of the system. But once the devil makes that last desperate move of directly intervening in the system, God has no reason to let it continue to go on. If you owned the server, you're going to let you, the minute you realize somebody's hacked your server, you're going to walk in there and unplug the damn thing. Purge it. Do a restart. Wipe the thing out and start all over again. Jesus, in the resurrection. He set up the next round. But if you looked at all, if you were capable of looking at all the moves that are left on the chessboard from the resurrection to the end of the game, you understand there's only so many moves. You know, was Christian believers like to say Jesus wins in the end. Jesus won as soon as he was resurrected because, yes, the devil has a lot of moves to make, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what moves he makes. Ultimately, he's going to get down the moves. Every year that goes by, the devil has fewer moves to make. And ultimately, he'll just be left with essentially knocking the pieces off the board and directly intervening in the system. And once he does, God pulls the plug on the server, and we're done. Simple as. The point here as we wrap up is it's incorrect to have this mindset that the devil has the winning hand and we're just, we have no choice. We're losing until we lose so bad that Jesus says, I can't stand to watch you losers keep losing anymore. The devil keeps winning. And now he's pulling out his ultimate winning move by directly intervening and appearing as the Antichrist. That's not how it is. That's an incorrect perspective. The devil is playing out his moves, and every move he makes, he's closer to defeat. The appearance of the Antichrist is not the ultimate win move. It's a last act of desperation. We're going to wrap up on that note. I get it. Things are bad. But we have to keep, at the end of the day, you step back as believers. You step back. You read this black-pilling news. You see society we live in going to shit. And everybody has this attitude, well, this means the Antichrist is coming at any minute. Well, that's going to happen when it happens. You step back and you say, what's my role? What am I supposed to do? And you get back to base. This is what God has given me to do. I know what I'm supposed to be doing on this earth, coming to know him, working, growing my faith, and getting ready. That doesn't change. You get back and get refocused on what you're supposed to do. Don't be worrying about what the devil's doing all the time. You know what you're supposed to do. Do your job. Fulfill your mission, your goal in life, your purpose in life. That's what we keep doing. See people that get stressed out over the news, and they follow the news, and every day they read these news stories and they get emotionally twisted over it. And it's like, dude, you can't do anything about it. Step back and live your life how you're supposed to. That's what you can do. You can't have, these politicians don't care what you do. Live your life. That's what we do. We got to live our lives. We got to step back and say, what's my mission? Remember, why has God put me on this earth? Why did God create man at all? I'm supposed to know him, spiritually mature, spiritually grow, get ready. Get ready for the kingdom. Get ready for the eternal realm when I move to the eternal realm. We could go ahead and seg into a whole nother conversation about concurrently existing in the eternal and the physical. We don't have time for that today. I'll jot it down. We may do that next week. It'd be a good discussion to have. But yeah, anyway, we're wrapping up. You know how you're supposed to live. Do that. Fulfill. Blessed is the servant that when the master returns, he finds him doing the work he's supposed to be doing. The rest of the ranch may be on fire, but you're still doing what you were assigned to do. That's what we're supposed to be doing. Anyway, we are gonna wrap up. I'm gonna stop myself before I just keep on rambling. Hope you got something out of the show today, especially the Christian specific segment. I really do. I appreciate you joining me every week, showing up here. Dr. Johnson will be here tomorrow for his Orthodox Nationalist, and he'll wrap up our week on Thursday with his installment of the Daily Nationalist. I hope you'll get a chance to check all of that out. And as always, I hope you'll get a chance to join us here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.